The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello, welcome to the Occult Disney Podcast, where we find magical secrets hidden deep inside mice. Yeah. Hi, this is Matt here. As always, we have the Paranoid American. I guess
that's
you're
me.
Paranoid
I'm,
as
I'm
ever.
Also here.
You're paranoid as ever.
Yeah, honestly, I think I don't want to say plateau, but I kind of hit peak paranoia to now I either have to match people that are even more paranoid than me, and I'm not ready to go to some levels that I've seen out there. So I just, you know, I'm not necessarily the most paranoid American. I'm just a paranoid American.
Right, right. Well, yeah, everyone can be a little paranoid, right?
I think it's healthy. I think one of, I can't remember, it was a great thinker once said, total paranoia is total consciousness. That was actually Charles Manson. Never mind.
Today, well, I have to introduce it using the name of the Zoom meeting I made, which is Many Kinds of Poo, because we are looking at the many adventures of Winnie the Pooh and Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey. And as we were talking just before the show started, I made you watch Tokyo's Honey Hunt, which apparently is shattering your mind.
Yeah, I mean, you held me down and MK Ultra forced me to watch it, but now I love it and embrace it, and it's something that I want to visit now.
I'm thinking about what are we missing by not... I mean, ride-throughs are a lot of fun. I haven't been in America to do the runaway railway, but I feel like I'm halfway experienced, you know?
Now, this is honestly one of the cooler rides. It also looks a little bit more up-to-date because, like you were showing, it doesn't have the tracks. It's one of those track lists, so they call them, I think, 6D rides or at least 4D rides, where they can sort of just move anywhere they need to as it goes through the ride. And it also features probably the coolest scene in the original Winnie the Pooh movie, which seems like it's paying homage to that Dumbo scene where they get drunk and they have like the dancing elephants. So it feels like not only is that scene in the movie an homage to that, but now this ride is an homage to both of those. And it just looks like a great ride. It's kind of short, but you know, they all are, aren't they?
Yeah, it is. I consider it my favorite. And prime time for me going to Tokyo Disney was about 2004 to 2008. I'd go like two or three times a year. And I don't know how it works now, if you have to get on apps and like plan your vacation 6 weeks in advance like you do in Florida now. But, you know, the plan for me is go to Main Street, have breakfast, be ready when they let the gates out of Main Street, make a beeline for the Honey Hunt, get a fast pass, and then hit one of the mountains.
You do have to have a strategy now. You can't go there and just kind of play it by ear. If you do, you're just sort of bumbling around. You're probably not going to just like wander into a unexpectedly short line on a great ride. You kind of have to know exactly what you want to do and plan it out. Like you said, maybe not in Orlando where you got to do it weeks or months in advance, but you can't just kind of like show up and play it by ear as much.
For the most part, you're correct, especially in Tokyo. But I used to target like Thursdays and Thursdays in February, and I do remember being at Disneyland like about 6 at night and being like, gee, I actually wish there were more people here. It was like kind of emptyish, you know, a little bit creepy. And Disney Sea we went once and there was nobody in the park. We were getting fast passes till about 10 a.m and then we were like, why are we getting fast passes? There's nobody here. It's like we rented the place for a day. I don't know if you can experience that sort of thing anymore, but
there's an art form to it. I mean, we've got all sorts of tropical depression and hurricane warnings, and I do remember there was one year there was a hurricane warning and it was on my birthday, and we had driven all the way out to Busch Gardens, which is in Tampa. And when we got there, they had actually just declared being reopened, but everyone that was in the park previously had to go home because they were shutting down preemptively. So it was really just us, and it was so dead that by the time we got up to the roller coaster to ride it, they just let us sit in there and just stay strapped in and just say, you know, run us again. We didn't have to go back through the line or anything. It was great, but you can't really ever plan on that to happen, you know.
I'm realizing both of us do a lot of podcasting. That was at least a two-timer award for us. So Maybe not up to the five timers, but but yeah, it's nice to know that you own the park for a day, or you know, depending on what weird circumstances we have. I guess we should. You want to talk about the nice movie or the naughty movie first?
Let's do the nice one. Honestly, I wouldn't even call it naughty. I wasn't as impressed as I was hoping to be. Although it might seem silly to say I was expecting more from Blood and Honey. Oh, I definitely expecting more out of it.
I honestly wasn't, but so I we'll talk about that maybe as a bit of an afterthought. The Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh. I'm sure I saw all the clips somewhere when I was a kid, but you know, just all willy nilly here and there. We watched it about 10 years ago because we got the Blu-ray of the 2011 Winnie the Pooh, which
I watched for the first time, you know, getting prepared for this. I figured I was working ahead a little bit to get more content in.
Oh, that one gets its own episode, by the way. But
okay.
That actually is one of my probably top five Disney movies, the 2011 one.
It was great. It was more than I was expecting, for sure. And I loved how it paid homage to sort of like that hand-drawn animation. I mean, they used, you know, the conveniences of modern technology in some of the scenes, but it looked great. You know, it didn't look like some kind of like frilly computer flash animation that was just kind of cranked out.
And that's part of the reason I liked that one. But yeah, everybody liked it. You know, my wife liked it. My daughter liked it. We were like, we should go watch the classic Pooh movie. So I don't know which one. I guess you watched the 2011 one second.
I did, yeah.
Okay, that was good, because if you watch them the other way, the older one, it's very charming, but the newer one just has sharp, really sharp dialogue and, you know, wordplay and stuff. And the old one's charming, but not that funny.
I could see that, yeah.
So, and then I think we put on the Huffalo movie, which is like which doesn't have much of the charm either.
The what movie?
The Huffalo movie, which is 2005, 2006. I think it mostly focuses on Roo, which is a bad choice.
It's called the Huffalo, but it's a Winnie the Pooh movie. Was this a direct-to-video type of movie?
Yeah, Disney Toons or something, about 2005.
What about the 2011?
Was that
theatrical?
It was theatrical, and it flopped as hard as possible.
Wow.
Which that's, I mean, geez, have we even seen a proper hand-drawn looking Disney since that and Princess and the Frog, both good movies, and both of them kind of
decided to dip their toe back in the pool, and it was like, whoa, it's still pretty cold in there.
Yeah, I mean, they did a good job, right? I mean, Princess and the Frog is far from my favorite, but like I was saying, 2011 Winnie the Pooh is pretty close to my favorite. So
it's I wish that sort of level of animation maybe got paid attention to less juvenile projects.
Yeah.
Not in a bad way, but Winnie the Pooh is clearly like, you know, the Duplo. it's the Fisher Price of what could be something really cool.
Actually, in Japan, maybe because of the Honey Hunt, maybe that's why we have the Honey Hunt. Pooh is a little bit more, I guess, less kiddie. I mean, it is, but I mean, I've seen dudes at Disneyland walking around in like Pooh suits, you know, like hoodies and stuff. So
it's never not funny to just hear Pooh suits, or you know, all of the different, you know, I'm hearing them all. Even if I don't chuckle at all of them, I'm hearing every one of them.
Oh, I don't know if you had a look at my notes either, but I was not going to write Christopher Robin over and over again, so he's been renamed C Rob in my notes. yo, I'm C Rob. That's what got me when I was a kid. I was like, as a child, I thought Christopher Robin seemed like an irrepressible dork. I was like, oh, does mother dress him? You know, 5-year-old cynical Matt was, or maybe I was worried that I was dressed too similar to him. That might have been the problem too.
Well, there was, man, I might just be making things up or pulling this from a different dimension, right? But I could have sworn that there was also a TV show of Winnie the Pooh as well.
You are correct.
Not just these two. Okay, that, for whatever reason, I haven't seen it since I was a kid, but I remember watching it a lot, and I definitely got that same vibe from Christopher Robin from that. But rewatching these movies, I didn't get that much of a vibe, because he's not really even a main player in any of them. He just kind of shows up at the beginning and end. He's like the grandma in Muppet Babies, or like, you know, one of the adults in like any of those other sort of shows where they just kind of like pop in and out. But I remember the TV show, he rubbed me the wrong way. I don't remember why.
that, well, he's a character that should only be in it the amount he is here, right? More than that, yeah. Like in the show you're mentioning, it just rubs you the wrong way. I guess the thing with the 80s Disney stuff is it's a weird case where the original stuff kind of outclassed the IP stuff, because what you got?
Yeah.
DuckTales with all the Illuminati stuff. That's fun. The Rescue Rangers, Tailspin, Gummy Bears. I know a lot of listeners just got like 10 earworms stuck in their head there. So
those ones were all great shows. There was also, there's a lost media sort of search for the Dumbo live action / puppet show that was in the 80s. And that one's a little bit creepy to go back and watch. That one I also remember watching all the time.
Oh, okay. That sounds fun. That sounds similar to something I just had seen, which was 1989 Ice Capades with Super Mario on ice. And Mr. Belvedere is playing King Koopa.
It was a different time, man.
And then Mario just kind of disappears while Luigi takes out all of the Troopa Koopas and Goombas or whatever. And then Mario kind of shows up at the end to claim the glory. It's like Luigi has to do the work. So,
I mean, I would, if I was the popular one that had, you know, top billing, I would just have my brother do all the dirty work.
Yeah. But you need to
sit back and collect those checks
on stage. How do you want to hit the 77 movie? I mean, I know it's like a meme now, but the first thought that came to me is just trying to work out who everyone's, you know, psychological issue is in the 100 Acre Wood gang.
Yeah, it's funny because when I was trying to do some research into like some of the archetypes and the symbols that are part of this movie, like the top 100 results are all just people playing armchair psychologists and just giving each character a different sort of mental illness, which is interesting because the first thing I thought of is that there should be a website out there where someone does this for just every movie. You just psychoanalyze every movie and determine who's the psychopath and who's the narcissist and who has ADHD and all these things.
Well, unless it's
why is it Winnie the Pooh in particular? but why is it this movie in particular that seems to get that much of a specific focus, I wonder?
I think the key, because Sesame Street gets this too, I think you have to have a truly depressed character, and then people want to like figure out what's wrong with everyone else as well. Because, okay, yes, you know, Snuffleupagus and I was about to say Grimace, Eeyore.
Oscar the Grouch.
Yeah. Well, Oscar owns it though. I heard the thing with Oscar the Grouch, the idea was, oh, this will get kids used to kind of the curmudgeonly people from different cultures and inner cities, you know? Like, so when you have
to live in the garbage cans, yeah,
when you have to live with the angry Polish guy down the street, you know, like Sesame Street has taught you to accept them because you love Oscar the Grouch.
And I guess part of living in a, you know, tight, sort of dense New York is just people popping in all the time unexpectedly, and you just have to like deal with their issues. So it's a pretty decent representation of that.
And if the 2011 Pooh had been more successful, you know, the next one could be like Eeyore gets some MDMA. That could be a cool movie. You just can't. Well,
Eeyore's already into like body modification a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's more into prosthetics, right? He's lost part of himself. So.
But, and actually, so this was, again, I kind of like just analyzing the flaws in the rules set by the stories themselves, because it's one of the hardest things to do when you're writing and making a story is to create some kind of unique set of laws, but then never break those laws. So this one was just interesting to me because at the very beginning of the 77 movie, they're nailing a little spike into Eeyore's ass, right, to put the tail on. And this, it, like, no one mentions anything about it, but it's clearly not hurting him at all. In the 2011 movie, Pooh reaches up and the threads just burst open on his stomach and the stuffing comes out a little bit and he kind of like stitches himself back up. So clearly they don't feel pain even when they go through horrible things that would, you know, that would end either of our lives or at least put us into a great deal of agony, right? Especially that latter one.
Maybe they so choose there,
there's
to
this
feel.
Part. Well, they choose when to feel. But there's obviously a baseline here where they're stuffed animals. They can't necessarily feel the same amount of pain as we can. Yet they're afraid of bees and getting stung by bees. And they're afraid of, you know, these hypothetical monsters. But just wondering, what is that really at stake here? Is anyone at stake of dying? I mean, that the scariest thing that happens in the 77 movie, which I am absolutely positive that I had nightmares about this scene when I was a kid, but they go up into Owl's house and it's just like swaying like crazy. And to this day, I have nightmares as a 40-year-old man. I have nightmares about being in a house that's like 5 or 6 stories and there's like a strong breeze and the whole house starts to shake. And I'm just, terrified of my house just smashing against the ground and me getting hurt in the process. And when I saw that scene, I was like, oh, that's what did that to me.
Oh, I lived your nightmare. Okay. The 2011 quake in Japan, I was on the 6th floor teaching a class. And the buildings are built to sway, and it was a strong quake, right? So I'm like, well, oh, the road's coming closer. The road's going farther away. We're in the 6th floor. I'm holding the board to the wall because it's just like banging up and down on the wall. So
that's terrifying. That's absolutely terrifying.
I think I my social media quip once I had the internet again after that was, it's just like the earthquake ride.
I don't believe that. The earthquake ride is pretty lame.
Oh, okay, maybe it's better. Well, I was in a classroom, right? So there's a lameness to that.
I guess. I don't know, but you didn't have the extra ambiance of like screaming children, or is everyone just so well behaved that you didn't even notice that?
Oh,
it was an earthquake.
I had one 24-year-old ballerina. So no problems there.
What kind of classes are you teaching?
Oh, this was just an English class. It was middle of the afternoon. So that, this was when I taught adults. So usually the evening classes were the much busier ones. So might have even been a private lesson. I don't remember, but yeah. I would say if you're going to die in the quake or this, yeah.
So are you actually going over lesson plans during this, or was it?
I spent the first minute of the earthquake still trying to assign some homework. Because it was just a little shaken. And then it got like wild crazy after that. So the first minute was just like kind of a low rumble. And then it started getting more herky jerky. I mean, I guess you haven't lived in any earthquake lands.
No. We just have hurricanes. But yeah, earthquake seems terrifying because the ground, I mean, aside from things smashing and falling, but the ground can just open up and swallow you and you're just inside the earth at this point.
Liquefaction, yeah. But
well, that's if you believe in the molten core.
Well, now they want to say there's two cores, which I like that idea of. That's exciting. That doesn't make sense to me at all. So I like it.
that's like flat earth logic, right? Oh, that's new. That's cool.
Yeah, no, this is like from academia saying that. So yeah,
but there's two core. Was it a core within a core? Are we talking about like a binary star situation?
I didn't look into it deep enough. I'm pretty sure it's core within a core, but I was thinking of a binary star at the center of the earth, inner earth.
I prefer that. If we're going to go all the way out there, I'd rather have a binary star sort of situation, because a core within a core just sounds like a core with an extra step.
I mean, at this point, isn't it scientifically even reasonable to be like, yeah, there's probably like a black star somewhere pairing our sun at this point?
We're just God's fingernail, man.
So, there we go. That's the other trope with this, the Zen of Pooh. Pooh doesn't care that we're just God's fingernail. He's pretty in the moment most of the time. I mean, he's obsessed, but...
That's right. I mean, he's an interesting paradox because on one hand, there's this like Tao of Pooh where he can just be satisfied by the most simple of things, just being out in nature and being with friends and just, the pursuit of honey. And that if you could just please yourself with like the simple attainable, pleasures of your life, this is sort of like this Taoist outlook on a very superficial level, because on the other side of that level is a person that gives into every sort of whim, that doesn't really have any self-restraint, that puts himself and others into extreme danger constantly. So he's also sort of like the bad side of this. And then if you want to get into like a Gnostic
clown
grid, well, I wouldn't call him the trickster as much as some of the other characters.
Yeah.
Maybe in like the term like Mr. Magoo, he's kind of like a Magoo trickster, I guess, where he unintentionally becomes a catalyst for a storyline. but also in like the Gnostic angle here, he's kind of the demiurge. If you don't put that on Christopher Robin,
yeah,
and you put that on Winnie the Pooh, because Pooh is the one that is basically just always in the pursuit of these quick material, short term, you know, like gratification schemes. And that's sort of that like ultimate flaw of the demiurge, where you think it's this perfect, you know, sphere. You think it's this platonic solid, but it's really kind of this ugly, bumpy, you know, sort of imperfect ball.
I mean, that could be the demiurge aspect of Christopher Robin projected, because, you know, I know when I was a kid and have several toys to play with, there's the one where you're kind of like, oh, that one's where I'm projecting most of my personality. So maybe Robin
actually gets his friends
in extreme danger a lot.
I think I would put Christopher Robin more into the Antichrist category, because he ends up becoming this sort of like figure that they all follow. And he's not necessarily without fault, but he just happens to be kind of superior to all of them. So they look at him like a god. But, you know, his parents are like the actual god of the parents. That would be the real god. So he kind of serves as a placeholder for that real god, because these silly stuffed animals don't have the intellectual capacity to understand the concept of a real god. So he's that stand-in. So in that case, he could be the demiurge, but I think he also could be the Antichrist.
Okay. Yeah, I could sit here and argue more on the demiurge angle, but I think you win the argument with the simple sound of the sentence, Christopher Robin is the Antichrist. That right there just kind of wins it, I think. I don't want to argue that statement. What are some words
that I also had a note here, that the beginning of the movie, the 1977 movie, where he basically is getting stung by hundreds of bees, or potentially, that for some reason reminded me of the movie My Girl. That's kind of how My Girl ended up too, but Macaulay Culkin wasn't as friendly and bumbly as just, you know, Winnie the Pooh was. I think he ends up dying and it becomes very sad after that. But it's essentially the exact same plot line.
Yeah, okay, I can see that. Oh, even before that, we have that bit of live action that earlier Disney movies love to throw in, right? And seeing the stuffed poo, growing up, does this make any sense to you, a beer and cigarettes bear?
No.
Okay, like you're visiting, when you're a child in the 80s, you're visiting a friend's house, and it's maybe like where the parents like party a little more, so it's got the shag carpeting with the cigarettes caked in, and that kind of fur on the kind of matted fur on a stuffed bear, like just
takes okay. I've never heard of beer and cigarettes
bear permanent beer and cigarette before. Smell. Yeah, so you have like I don't even say the parents are horrible, just so you know, they like to party a bit, right? And the kids got the bear, and it smells like beer and cigarettes. I just remember that happening, like multiple. Maybe it's because I grew up in the South, but.
That's kind of funny too, because the original Winnie the Pooh from the stories before it turned into animation, they described that bear as being so raggedy that even the initial illustrations for the book, they were like, let's make it look a little bit nicer than the way that it was originally described. And then Disney improves on that a little bit more, even to where it's, you know, it's kind of like a clean bear. It's not like sort of the Scarlet Rabbit or whatever it was called.
Well, it's like, interestingly, in the parks, which we mentioned a little before, they've already cleaned them up some more, because the fur on, you know, walk around Pooh is very fine and short, right? Where if you hug Chewbacca, you know, Chewbacca will hug you. He's going to smell funny because he's got all that matted fur.
Well, and he's been out in space, man. He's a fighter, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I'm just talking the practical walk around situation, the fur on them, you know, like Chewbacca's got like the real poo fur, you know, he's walking around in his poo suit, as I was saying before, but now meaning it the other way.
I'm actually somewhat convinced that that might be the real Chewbacca, and Disney has enslaved an entire race of actual alien beings and forcing them to work for entertainment purposes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's why the Wookiees are so angry, right? They've been enslaved by Frozen Head Walt. Oh, yeah. When Pooh comes into, is it Rabbit's house and just eats everything in the universe? I was like, Rabbit invited him in. So I guess Pooh's a bit of a food vampire, a honey vampire, is he? You got to invite him in before he'll drain you of your honey.
It seems like everyone would keep this locked up because he's, you know, clearly they have a small social circle. So if someone knocks on the door, it's like one of five people guaranteed, right? And one of those people is just going to walk in and eat all of the honey in the house. So I don't know. It just seems like they would have an intervention at some point. That would be an interesting movie, actually, like Pooh's intervention, or, you know, Pooh discovers he's got type 2 diabetes and he can no longer consume, you know, high levels of sugar anymore.
That could be the same movie where ER takes MDMA then. Pair him up, you know, as a B plot.
I mean, comes out and he's in favor of stevia. He gets all like super new agey about it.
Yeah. I mean, you might see in my notes. I mean, you just eat the bees. That's what we do here in Nagano. I mean, it's not a popular food, but you can find it in all at the souvenir shops. It's Hachinoko, which is candied bee larva.
Okay. I mean, sure. Does it have to be bee larva? I assume that once you candy it, it could be any sort of larva, but also, now that it's candied, you could also just eat sugar and then like skip the larva part, and it's similar. No,
not sorry, I shouldn't have said candy. Not like a candied apple, more of like a soy glaze, I think, in there. So honestly, I haven't tried Hachinoko. Okay. I have tried Inago, which is soy covered locust. So,
how big are these locusts we're talking about? Because I've seen some beefy locusts.
These would be grasshopper size.
Okay.
So, but, you know, you just got to prepare for when we're all eating insects. So, no, this was actually this is back when my daughter was like 2.5 and we went to the kind of a countryside restaurant and they brought out like service, you know, like the little extra free things. And I'm like, are they fucking with me? Because it's a little bit intimidating. But then on the other, I ate one, right? But then on the other hand, my daughter 2.5 of the time sitting there chowing down on them. I'm like, this feels like a David Lynch movie or something.
Before she knew what they were or didn't matter?
Yeah, she's a almost 14-year-old junior high student. Now she won't eat it now.
Yeah.
You know, a teenage girl is not going to sit. I don't know. Actually, in Japan, and it's not completely out of a question, a teenage girl is going to be eating some Hachinoko or Inago. So,
well, you heard that, Klaus Schwab. You're making progress all across the world.
I want to see is the Japanese junior high or high school girl that is just obsessed with sumo wrestlers and has like, you know, posters of sumo wrestlers in her locker and all that sort of stuff. That I haven't seen this yet and I want to see that.
So are sumo, I mean, I'm just going to make a broad assumption that I'm almost guaranteed to be wrong on, but I kind of assume that sumo wrestling would almost be like Wild Western shooting in America, where like it's a very specific demographic holding on to like a traditional past, but that it's maybe not as big mainstream. Or is sumo wrestling big mainstream?
I would say both. All the Oji-san, remember, Japan's a very aging population. And a lot of the old people are still straight up for sumo. I see a fair amount of sumo because the way it works is they have six, seven. Sumo basically works is they have like 2-week competitions in a different city each time. So there's one at the sumo stadium in Tokyo, and then there's one in Osaka maybe like a month or two later, usually based around one of the national holidays. So before the news, the NHK news, you know, if you're having dinner and you're a little early, you're going to see the last few sumo matches. So
okay, that's actually kind of cool, man.
No, I like watching it. It's funny because a lot of sumo matches, maybe it's right where you're talking about the Wild West buildup, because they kind of look at your, you know, scrape around, go, then turn around, put sod on, you know, throw some sod around, come back. And the match itself is often 2 seconds. The other guy just shoves the other dude out. When a match takes longer, it's like 30 seconds, maybe even 2 minutes in the rare case. It just looks like they're hugging it out for a while for the most part. Yeah. But the crowd's just cheering as these two very large men are hugging it out, you know?
I want to see a UFC version of sumo wrestling.
But that won't work, though, because the sumo wrestlers, when they're sumo wrestling, they're part of the sumo stable. They live relatively ascetic lives as a sumo wrestler. You know, they don't take sponsorships until they retire.
No, they need someone to shake it up, man. They need someone to go in there and Hollywood it up.
It's send Joe Rogan over to sumo wrestler.
Joe Rogan? No, I'm talking about like Randy Man Savage. Oh, you want some? You want some? Yeah.
Oh, no, I'm thinking of someone who's actually, those guys aren't physically capable of doing that anymore.
I mean, but you just said yourself, right? It's a 2 to a 30 second experience. I can guarantee the WCW can put together an entertaining 2 to 30 second experience.
But
you slap some Ultimate Warrior paint on a sumo wrestler and tell me that that's not going to sell shirts.
Yeah. Anyway, the reason this doesn't happen, besides all of the tradition, is that this actually does have a religious-ish kind of, I mean, religion's like a different word in Japan, you know, but it technically, when sumo wrestlers are fighting, it's two mountains battling, and each mountain has a god. So they've built themselves into like mountain gods, and now they're battling each other. So that's one of the reasons.
Sounds right for cults. Sounds like you could easily go from being a sumo wrestler to a cult leader.
I'm thinking, I mean, after I retire, I mean, I don't, people aren't like actually worshiping him, and that's just the metaphor for what they're doing. But,
it's because they need someone to spin that for them, man.
Right, right. But, you know, again, religion in Japan is just kind of like a different beast. Like everyone goes and gets like a fortune or whatever at New Year's and prays the shrine, or, you know, just claps their hands and bows and walks away. Right. That's usually it. I mean, there's no priest telling you anything in these cases. You're just going.
Well,
there.
That's the only way to get home from Oz. I thought that's like the exact formula.
I mean, I spend a lot of time meditating at temples, which does that make me extremely religious in Japan? I'm not sure. I'm just there because it's a nice spot, you know, but, right.
On the plus side, and I think, well, sorry, go ahead. On the plus side, what?
The only fundamentalists I've run into in Japan are Christians, which is maybe like 2% of the population.
That would be interesting. Back in the minority, make them feel like they've got an uphill battle to fight.
South Korea is weird. I think South Korea is something like 50% Christian. Like, maybe it's the American influence or whatever from after the Korean War. I don't know, but. Yeah, they have a lot of Christians in Korea. So I live in Atlanta, which has a lot of Korean immigration, and that tended to be the more, you know, coming to America, that tended to be the more religious people. So it's kind of weird.
Well, it's only somewhat weird, but there's a huge political aspect to that, right? Because whenever there's a communist nation, Americans love to flood it with missionaries because it's almost like, because not only is there the communist versus capitalist dynamic, but then there's the communist atheist slash religious dynamic. So especially evangelists, they see that as like a vacuum that needs to be filled immediately. So they pump missionaries into anywhere that looks like it might kind of be leaning that way. So I feel like that's a huge component to the South Korea, since, you know, it's so close to North, those horrible atheistic communistic heathens in North Korea, right?
Yeah. And it's been political in Japan too, because you know, former Prime Minister Abe was assassinated last year. The guy shot him said it's because his mother was taken, you know, basically destroyed by the Unification Church, which is backing many Japanese politicians now, including Abe. So it's an assassination. Don't kill anybody is, I think, a really good rule of thumb in life. But I'm like, actually, what he achieved his goal, because it's now a major political issue how much this Korea, this Unification Church, which is based in Korea, has influence on Japanese politics, is like a major issue now.
Yeah, it's problematic, but let's just agree that, you know, high level political assassination is extremely effective in delivering messages.
It's just, I feel like this is one of the, like,
we're,
I mean,
we're
the guys
advocating for it. We're just acknowledging that it is extremely potent.
Well, I'm just like when what's his name shot Reagan, you know, Jodie Foster was not impressed, right? whereas this guy, I mean, he's in prison now. He's probably never coming out. They've had him under psychological evaluation for like 4 months. Who knows what that means? but he did achieve his goal, I guess, if he's going to pay the piper of consequences.
So,
anyway, how do we get
so to wrap this back into poo?
Yeah, how do we get there?
Well, I think at least Poo would definitely be the sumo wrestler winner of this whole crew. I don't think anyone's pushing Poo out of a ring.
How about Eeyore? Or does he just not have the drive? He doesn't have the motivation.
Yeah, he would just be like, yeah, oh, whatever, oh well.
Push me out. I'm out of the ring this. Now. Yeah, yeah. So what other? Oh, yeah. I guess Tigger is kind of weird in that Tigger was not a character in the original short because these shorts were produced. The wiki didn't actually list a specific year. So I'm just going to spit guess. It was something like 62, 67, 75. Those are spit guesses. None of those dates are jiving.
I feel uncomfortable saying and hearing the word Tigger, especially the way that they use it in the 1977 movie. He just seems like an unpleasant person. And I think even in the original, you watch this and he almost seems like the guy that's going to come and just destroy stuff. Like he's almost like the crazy drunk or like someone that is the maniac that, you know, needs to be contained somehow.
I figured out exactly who he reminds me of. Of course, Tigger would be the first because Tigger's the only one. But
Steve-O?
There's a fun one. No, I was thinking of Star Trek Voyager and Neelix. Tigger is a Neelix.
I can kind of see that. It's a very niche reference.
It is, but I'm watching Voyager now. So maybe because they're both kind of orangey too. I don't know. They got spots. So that said... In the Honey Hunt ride you watch, the Tigger segment's fantastic because that's where they bounce your ride vehicles around. On
I saw that. I could see floor. What was happening, but obviously from the video, you don't get the experience. But yeah, that's where that 6D comes in, where they have all that cool stuff that you can't usually do on the track rides as easily.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, I was like, I mean, Rabbit, why did Rabbit back down in the end on Tigger? He's kind of right. He's like, just own it, man. You've already done, you've passed the veil already. Don't pull back now.
I find Rabbit to be the most relatable out of all of these characters by far.
Yeah. Maybe he's the surrogate for C-Rob's parents or something, you know?
A little bit, although I don't see Christopher Robin following orders from any of these animals. And also... Winnie the Pooh is a stuffed animal. Piglet is a stuffed animal. Eeyore is a stuffed animal. What the hell is Rabbit? Is Rabbit a stuffed animal? What about Owl? Are they all stuffed animals? Because they don't all exhibit the same sort of, you know, visual cues.
Oh, I was very easily on they're all stuffed animals, I guess, because they've been slightly altered. We see that from the live action footage that we're seeing this animated realization of these stuffed toys. So yes,
I guess, although but there's a difference between seeing Winnie the Pooh's stomach open up and not being too shocked. But if I saw something like that happen to Rabbit, it just feels like it would have been a little bit more visceral because they don't really portray Rabbit and Owl. Like, for example, Owl, like what if someone like ripped his wing off? Is it just like, oh, haha, it's just stuffing. We'll sew it back on. If they feel more real, if they're portrayed more like actual animals than some of the other characters. Like imagine someone nailing a big spike into the back of Owl.
I guess that's what the next movie's for. Although it was not Owl.
Okay, that's true.
Sorry. Here's a less niche Tigger. No, still kind of niche, but what is a Tigger? Could be like a Poochie if we're not careful. You know, Poochie died on the way home to his home planet.
That's right.
Oh, that's why I was thinking last night. I was because Tigger is so much like I'm the only one and proud of it. So I was thinking maybe he's like Lobo where he murdered all the citizens of his original planet, inhabitants of his original planet.
I kind of like this. I can definitely feel some Lobo energy coming off Tigger because he was so obsessed with being the only one that he just killed everyone else of his kind. Because he actually says, it's so interesting in this original movie, Tigger isn't just his name, it's what he is. Like a Tigger is whatever that species or animal type you know is, but it's also his name. So I think maybe he just wanted to own the entire species. He just wanted to become like the Ubermensch, Uber Tigger.
Yeah, I like that. You know, I haven't seen the Tigger movie yet, so maybe that's what that's about. So
it's just a wholesale slaughter of an entire race of Tiggers.
See, that's the problem. I mean, maybe we'll get to Blood and Honey in a bit, but let's talk a little bit about Pooh and astral projection first, because as you know, I'm just keyed into these psychedelic sequences, ride and movie.
Okay, well, let me point out first, because on the way into that psychedelic sequence in the 77 movie, this starts out with Pooh getting out of bed and grabbing his gun, which I think needs to be in every single Pooh adaptation at this point. It's clearly not anymore. I was looking for the gun in the 2011 remake. There was no gun. But in a lot of the other earlier ones, there was a Russian version of Winnie the Pooh too, called Vinny Voo or something like that. And there was prominent use of a gun in that one too. So people, I'm on jacked. Board. I think there needs to be more of them.
People get jacked in the 100-acre woods. You know, it's a low down bad part of town, right?
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So
people losing houses left and right.
But I guess the biggest thought I have, even eclipsing my my Dumbo flashbacks, is you saw the ride effect on video, and that live is just amazing, because in the ride you see Pooh just as in the movie sitting down in his house and falling asleep, and then, you know, they have like a Pepper's Ghost version of him come up in the entire room.
Yeah, it's so cool, because there's like a 3D even in the 77 movie, there's like this 3D effect where they clearly drew, you know, like rotated an actual bear and drew it in all these different positions, because he's kind of like hovering in space and rotating.
And the ride itself couldn't quite illustrate it for you, but it's almost a 360 thing. I think the door to the Tigger room still in the back, like it doesn't close or anything, but otherwise the entire room has been turned into space, which is pretty, pretty awesome. Yeah, Tokyo has some cool effects. I mean, I'm sure some of the newer stuff even eclipses that, but.
So, I mean, I'm somewhat convinced that this entire scene was a love letter to the Dumbo drunken scene. But I don't have any like specific evidence or research that backs up specifically why they added this scene. But it just felt so out of left field. Like, oh, all of a sudden there's this cool dream sequence that like someone took a hit of acid, and now we're watching that in this otherwise very unassuming Winnie the Pooh movie.
Yeah, I wrote Woozles or Psychedelic, and then just, are we reusing Dumbo animatics? I'm fully cool with that. That's great. Again, I don't know if you could see us in the ride video, but when you go in that psychedelic room in the ride, there's about four ride vehicles with guests, but there's another two or three that just have like Huffalumps and Woozles in them. So you're riding around, and then you go by another ride vehicle that has like these insane creatures in it. So, and it's trackless, so you don't know where they're going, where you're going, or yeah, and it shows you different scenes. So if you ride it twice, you'll see slightly different scenes, as, or at least in a slightly different order. So that's pretty cool. It's always nice to randomize your rides.
That's the dream, man. I remember when I was working at Disney, that was the big thing, is everyone was trying to move to, like, there was these different phases. So that's kind of like one of the initial phases. The later phases that they probably push out once they got all the money and the research done is that it's fully customizable to where they know what type of rider you are. And since that you can have, you know, you can be put with other riders that want that experience, and you don't even have to tell anyone what your preference is. They'll just be able to figure it out based on how often you go to certain rides and just stupid little surveys, to where now it's not just random each time, it's custom tailored and random each time.
Of course, they're now more and more, they're making you work for the rides, right? You know, Buzz Lightyear Astro Blasters. You got a, it's a shooting gallery. Toy Story Mania like ups it up a bit. And Spider-Man Web Slingers in California. And I've heard this about, of course, Universal, but the Mario Kart ride. I've heard of those rides being kind of stressful because you have
They gamify them, man. Yeah. They gamify them because they want to give you an incentive to go back and try and ride it four or five times in a day.
But I did hear, especially on Mario Kart, which opened in California a few months ago, that, you know, some people are like, well, you know what? If you just take the helmet off and look at the ride scenes, that's kind of nice. Because otherwise you have all this, you know, like augmented reality crap in your face and, you know, you can't even appreciate what's out there. That's what I've heard. Haven't done it myself. I might love it. But I am like in a ride. I want to sit back like in the Honey Hunt. Maybe the event sequence of events is slightly different. That's why Florida's Mr. Toad was so popular, right? Because it had the two tracks that were different. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I don't know where I was heading for that, but I love the randomization of that scene. And that kind of, I think, helps to recreate the Dumbo-ish vibe we get in the movie because it's unpredictable and the ride's unpredictable in the movie.
They should have their own ride. Seriously, there should just be a drunk Dumbo elephant ride. You know, it's the Fantasia elephants. It's the Dumbo elephants. It's the Winnie the Pooh elephants, but they just need their own and like hidden pink elephants, and if you find them in the park, they give you like a free hit of MDMA or something cool.
Yeah, I'm looking for one more note. There was speaking of psychedelia, there was, I think it was somewhere near the end where Pooh just starts adopting like a very like LSD inspired, you know, right at the end. I guess when they're trying to get Tigger out of the tree, he just seems to be functioning on like LSD logic.
He's become enlightened, man. That's that Tao aspect.
Okay, I guess that. And then I also thought at that point, is Kanga a nudist? Because Rue wears clothes, but Kanga does not. I'm sure it's just how the toys came, but yeah.
I also, I feel embarrassed about this, but I never really quite put two and two together of Kanga and Rue. Kanga always sounded like such a weird, exotic name to me. I know I'm probably outing myself as probably having like four brain cells that are just randomly bump into each other sometimes. But that it formed the word kangaroo, I only realized that on my watch through when I was doing this for our show here, making notes.
Well, it's like how I didn't actually work out Cruella de Vil until like we watched 101 Dalmatians and I was like, oh,
okay,
my God,
fair
really?
Point. Yeah, we're even now because I never put Kanga and Rue together.
Yeah, yeah, I got that one. But yeah, I was kicking myself on. I was like, oh, it's didn't even really spell it, change the spelling much. Okay.
and also, I'm sure this has been pointed out at infinite, you know, like by plenty and plenty of different articles. But it was interesting to me that Tigger says TTFN. He like abbreviates it. So he's kind of like one of the originators of that really annoying online, you know, abbreviated speech.
Him and Elvis, TCB. Taking care of business with the lightning bolt. Yeah. So that's what it made me think of, though, especially since the movie. Well, yeah. Tigger segments definitely from the 70s. So again, I was spit guessing when they made these, but I know it was two of them were the 60s and the last one was the 70s, I think. Why doesn't Wiki give you that information? You think it would. You got to look up the shorts themselves. Yeah, this is technically an anthology movie. I guess it got a little bit of a theatrical release, but this would have been straight to video a decade later, you know?
Yeah, this movie in particular, it definitely, they even sort of joke halfway in. They're like, and then from pages 40 to 70, there's just like a bunch of words and a bunch of boring stuff happens. And it's like, you're describing the movie. You're giving away the plot. You know what I mean? It's sort of funny when the movie makes a self-reference to how boring the movie would be if they just followed the book. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah. And I thought the 2011 one did a nice job of kind of upping the book game as well.
Oh, absolutely.
So,
and they also, the narrator talks directly to Pooh a little bit more, but then like they use the book to like wiggle him out of bed. And yeah, I love the dynamic behind that. And also, there was something really cool in the intro of the 77 movie. They have this isometric look to the credits where they kind of show this very fictionalized, simplified overview of where they live. And like as they show each person, they kind of have their each little spot in the map. And when they redid the 2011 intro credit scene, it looked almost identical to that. It had that same sort of isometric feel where all these characters are like standing on top of a map. And I love that. I thought it was like a really cool way to pay homage to that original one.
Yeah, I guess one thing we're finding is 70s Disney just owned the credit sequences.
Yeah, it's very true, man. I think there was like a certain art to it, because before this, it originally started out on the page turns, which was interesting for the first couple, but I'm glad that they didn't just like keep that particular motif going for every single movie. And then some of them, they just completely dialed in. It would just be, here's a still frame of a character followed by two or three sheets of credits, and then they swap it out. So I like it when they do something a little interesting. You know, maybe I guess I'm one of those people that really liked all of the Simpsons intros. Like I like seeing a little bit of variety, but also having like consistency to it.
Yeah. I wonder if Disney was kind of affected by, you know, some of the 60s stuff, like the Pink Panther movies, which would have the ornately animated credits, and they have kind of have to respond to that sort of thing.
Yeah, if you're Disney, you kind of always have to stay one step ahead of whatever anyone else is doing animation wise.
And then when someone, you know, leapfrogs you, that's when they have to, you know, flip out a touch, I guess.
That's when you gotta thaw out Walt's head and ask him for advice.
So I guess we'll move on to a bit of the blood and the honey while we're doing this. I basically came in expecting a dumpster fire to start out with, I guess. So I was not disappointed. I can say, I guess, where you sound like you were more disappointed. What were you looking for?
It's not that I was looking for something great. It was just that I really thought it would have been a little bit more than just the title and the subtitle. Like if you read the title of the movie and the subtitle and like maybe the summary, you've seen the entire movie and the rest of it is just like a fat guy with a decent mask on. I feel like all of the money in this movie maybe went to some of the masks and nowhere else. And then there's just a bunch of weird honey scenes. And as usual, I watch a lot of movies at like 1.5 speed. So it's a little bit faster. And there were some scenes that I knew were supposed to be like these scary scenes. And it just looks so kind of silly. And like, I guess maybe at normal speed, it probably looked just as silly.
Yeah. For me, it was like the basic idea is genius. Oh, it's public domain now. Genius idea. Execution, not so great.
Well, wait, when we say genius idea, to me, the genius part is take a well-known children's IP and just make it an R-rated movie and then figure out all the details once you've got that in motion.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, that's the good part. The execution, like as far as like everything else, except for as you mentioned, I did actually like the suits quite well. So
the suits were better than they deserve to be.
The nice dead eyes in there. If there is something from this that will stick with me, it'll definitely be those. They can only afford two suits apparently, but whatever. Oh, the 80 or okay, so you won't get a Eeyore. Tigger, he doesn't factor in because he's not actually, I guess he is Disney, isn't he? So you can't put Tigger in at all.
And just to be clear too, the mask was like not articulated, so if you saw the mask, you were seeing a mask, but at no point does like the mask emote anything substantial. It's just kind of, you know, a dead mask sitting on someone's head.
The place where they kneecapped themselves with this movie, I think with this one change, this would be a lot more fun, is they have, okay, they kill and eat Eeyore because Christopher Robin has left them and they don't have food. They decide not to talk anymore because that's what the humans do. No, you don't need to do that. I mean, how much better would this movie be if Pooh just got some kill lines after each shot, you know?
Right, but now we're getting back into the head was not articulated. So I think if anything, that plot line followed a functional limitation of the masks. Of course they can't talk, and now we have to explain why they can't talk, and we can't say because we couldn't afford a mask that can articulate speech, so they had to just say, oh, we don't talk anymore because humans do it. There, we just saved ourselves $100,000 in prosthetics.
We just shoot him from the back. He kills him, then have a shot from the back. And I guess, oh, bother. You know, like that would have, like, just that, everything else in the movie, not good, but could be the same. And just that. And or yeah. What did I just do? And there's like a pool of blood going all over the place. That, I mean, I guess you can't like copy the Disney voices because maybe that is their IP, but you could have a cute voice, right? So right. Just that would have made this movie like, would have made this so much more fun. Cause what, okay, my favorite horror,
I guess it would have been like throwing a sprinkle on a shit Sunday though.
Yeah, it's my favorite horror is Elm Street because, you know, Freddy's hysterical.
Yeah.
I was just talking this on another podcast yesterday, actually, where Wes Craven, when people would call Freddy Krueger a child molester, he'd be like, no, Freddy would never molest a child. He only kills them.
Yeah. Well, and also it's almost like, oh yeah, this movie could have been good if Wes Craven directed it. Well, of course, you know what I mean? Like almost anything that Wes Craven touches could become, you know, potentially extremely entertaining.
I've seen some bad Wes Craven.
Okay. There's always exceptions.
Because I think one of the biggest points of contention from the original Nightmare on Elm Street people with the remake was, no, he's now a molester. No, that's not cool. So also that one wasn't good. But
yeah, how dare you ruin this horrible murderer that murders children in their dreams. Now he's doing other things too. This is unacceptable.
Have you seen the Horror Hall of Fame specials from the early 90s?
I don't think so. No, it doesn't sound familiar.
I think they only did it 2 or 3 years. And the first one, it had like a almost dead Vincent Price making an appearance and stuff, but it's a Robert Englund, out of cost, like Robert Englund, not Freddy Krueger is the host. And he's just such a dork, like an endearing dork, but it's just funny because he's such a dork, you know, a film dork. And, it's great. I mean, it was fun watching him, but it's just a weird disconnect, but, yeah, where they're, you know, giving awards to Dracula and stuff and having musical numbers. It's a very bizarre show. So
I wish there were more. I really do wish that there were more Freddy Krueger type movies today. I think every once in a while there'll be like one that touches on that vein, but you know, Jason had how many movies, and there were a lot of Freddy Krueger movies. I kind of wish that reboot had still been going. And you know, honestly, a Wes Craven version of this, maybe that could be the next thing, is that we get some big budget horror producers that just jump onto expired IPs, and like you can just look forward to that. Like what are the companies? I think one of them's called Asylum Films.
Asylum, where, yeah.
Yeah. So like Snake on a Plane comes out and they've got like snakes on a train and you know, snakes on a plane, but it's like a two-dimensional plane, right? It takes place in like a different universe and the Transformers will come out, so they'll come out with like trans bots and all sorts of cool stuff like that. Yeah, Transmorphers. How dare I miss that?
I have sometimes got a weird urge to watch a few Mockbusters. I'd have to do it for a podcast. I could, you know, like Blood and Honey. I wasn't going to watch it unless I was going to podcast it. That's why I have to watch Human Centipede 2 in a month or so.
Again, man, the first one is not a bad movie. I don't remember as much from the second one. I know I've seen it, but I think it was just, I was expecting them to up the ante more, but I guess you can't up the ante too much from the first one. There's not, you haven't given yourself a lot of room to move from there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like, oh, we're going to sew 20 people together. Like, all right. It's still, you know, just as bad with three.
Oh, I'll see where that gets me later. So next week is, what I have to watch now, Ballistic X versus Sever.
Well, yeah. Now, A Human Centipede combined with Winnie the Pooh is an IP I think that would have made better waves than Blood and Honey.
Well, I kept accidentally saying the human caterpillar, so now I'm like, oh, the very hungry human caterpillar could be a cool one of these. I guess this is a new genre.
That's an Asylum film waiting to happen.
Yeah, exactly. Weird IP, public domain horror films. Unfortunately, the guy that made this film, I think, because this one's reasonably successful enough, he can make more. So I think he's the guy that's going to keep doing this.
I mean, that might not be bad, though, because there was clearly a budget issue with this one, and that it probably paid off and made profit means that maybe that gumption can like turn into the next big one. Maybe he will bring, you know, the human poo.
Maybe it can whatever he wants game. To call it. Yeah, I mean, there are directors whose first movies are just horrible. So,
M. Night Shyamalan.
isn't that the first one's okay, and the rest of them eat it?
I mean, I guess it depends on how much you really. Signs was not his first movie.
I like Signs for the most part. Yeah, I mean,
I think his first movie was a very like Christian oriented movie.
Oh, is that pre Sixth Sense? Okay, I guess I don't.
Yeah,
know
pre Sixth Sense. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So that maybe that's where we can inhabit this movie. We were talking about what are they in the 77 movie. Here I'm like, are these crossbreeds, hybrids, genetic deformations? Is Christopher Robin's father, you know, Dr. Moreau?
And I don't know why. I guess it was just because of all the other Disney movie backstories, but I had it in my mind, and I was wrong, that Christopher Robin was based on like some horrible tragic tale of like a kid that died young and the parents tried to extend the life through this story. I don't know where that came from. That wasn't the case with this particular movie. It actually seemed like, I didn't dig in super deep, but there was like no weird, creepy, hanky panky stuff going on with the original stories of this book, as far as I could tell.
Okay. That's nice. Yeah. Cause
it is nice.
I feel like I've gotten that vibe before too. There is something of the lungs. Maybe is that Peter Pan? There's something where I have definitely heard that story before. And hey, that would make it's good own depressing drama, I suppose. Probably wins Oscar and I never watch it, that sort of thing. getting right into this, and then yeah, they give that explanation. I thought they'd eat Roo first, but I guess he's too small and Eeyore must have some tasty rump, so tenderized, since they have to keep putting his tail on.
That's true. Yeah.
Okay, then we get that the 100-acre woods is apparently 4 hours in the middle of nowhere on in the UK, which I think if you go 4 hours in any direction, you're going to be in the ocean by then, but
I mean, it's just a really slow, smart car.
Yeah. Yeah. It just, I was like, is it that secluded? Cause there is an actual location, that the 100-acre woods is based on. And I don't think it's particularly remote. So, but you gotta have your horror movie in a remote place. This has to be Camp Silver Lake. Okay. I get it.
You have to make sure that there's no hope of you running away and finding anybody.
Crystal Lake. Sorry, I got the name wrong. Okay. I haven't really hardcore Friday the 13th as hard as some people have. This is almost horrible. Watching it, I'm like, his fiance or whatever, I'm like, is she playing 25 at 35? So I actually looked up their ages and she was 37. He was 27. I guess that makes her a cougar. Good for her. But then I had the much worse thought. Oh, this is the one actor that wouldn't take her shirt off on film. So she just dies this early death straight on.
That's horrible. It was a different standard for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. This movie has a lot less, no color. It's definitely brown. It's a brown movie. Not sure if I like just a brown movie.
Yeah, I mean, that's just when you get to the color grading aspect. Sometimes you just pick a theme and lean in hard, and you can use that to compensate for not the greatest shots and maybe not the greatest sort of film or lighting quality. You just kind of like load up your LUT and hope for the best. And they definitely did that. They leaned into a certain like cinema look and just dialed that thing to 11.
Oh, here we go. I was putting my closest experience to this movie is a few years ago when my parents visited. I drove them out into the Japanese woods. We were looking for a waterfall, and our car got accosted by like a bunch of monkeys. So it's kind of cute, but kind of freaky.
I thought that was going to get way darker. I thought you're going to drive them out to the woods where people just like never come back out of.
No, you do that with Tigger.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, God.
That's why it's on your mind.
Again, this again is another great idea. They could have brought Tigger and left them out in the middle of those. What are those woods called? There's like a like name for them, like the Haunted Woods or something.
Oh, the Misty Woods. I don't know. I think it was just a misty day, though. I think the woods are not usually haunted. They just were that day. Because they were like, I woke up, it was an awfully misty morning, which I guess is the case here as well. Let's see.
Suicide Forest, that's what I was thinking of. They just drop Tigger off in the middle of Suicide Forest and just leave him there.
Oh, the one near Mount Fuji? Is that what we're talking?
I think so. Yeah, the one that they got the one of the Paul brothers and all that trouble.
Yeah. I should remember the proper name for it, but I don't. But yes, that is definitely a thing. Yeah, I'm having a look here if there's anything. I mean, I'm mostly just like, I've written generic horror movie notes because I guess we're watching a generic slasher film.
Yeah, honestly, the movie left not a whole lot to take away from. It's like, you know exactly what you're getting into by the time 10 minutes goes by. And then the rest of it, you're just watching it slowly play itself out. There's no huge, I didn't catch any like big twists or any big plot breaks or any character development. It was just kind of exactly what you would expect it to be.
Yeah, it's got the gore. They at least had some Karo syrup budget for this. I guess it's nice to see some gore that's not just, you know, in a horror movie. That's just, I think they figured out now, don't do this stuff digital by 2023. So not everybody, but for the most part, I think.
Yeah, the digital blood splats and the digital sort of spurts. Yeah, practical effects is always going to win me over, at least.
It's got to be visceral and gory. I mean, I haven't seen the Thing prequel, I guess it's a prequel, but that was the thing. They did the practical effects, and then the studio was like, nah, make it digital. And they, you know, glossed, they just went over all of the practical effects with digital effects, which, you know, hopefully that movie gets derezzed someday, I guess. I don't know. Maybe it's not good, but watch the original Thing. No problem there. Oh no, the original would be 1950. Watch the first remake, I should say.
A lot of them don't hold up as well as you always expect them to.
Oh, the Thing does. If you haven't seen
the Thing,
recently.
Does the original Thing?
Well, I never saw that until about a year and a half ago. I watched that for my old sci-fi podcast, and I was like, "Oh my god, this movie's good!"
And that it's one got actually, some choice scenes in it.
That one was not well reviewed when it came out. Actually, it was thought of as like just a dumpster fire of a horror movie, and over the years, slowly, its reputation has become like it's one of the great horror movies. So
have we talked about Society before too? Have you seen the movie Society? I think it's 86.
No, I don't believe I have.
Oh, please put this on your list of horror movies to watch. I don't want to give you any extra insight, but it's called Society, and I'm pretty sure it's 86. Okay. And if you like the special effects from The Thing, don't set your expectations that high, but to the same level of like body horror and just like abstract stuff.
I do have a for body horror. That's probably, I'm sitting here dreading the human centipede probably, but you know, it's only funny when it happens to yourself, I guess.
What's human centipede?
No, body horror.
I don't think you can do a one person centipede.
Oh no, dude, it's a snake. The one Ouroboros. What's the name? Okay.
Yeah. The Ouroboros.
Okay, good. That's why I can never say it. So that one, right? No,
the Ooga Booga.
I was on a Zoom meeting yesterday or the day before, with my coworkers in our place, and the guys a few minutes late. So, I'll tell you a funny story. And I got up. I had to go to the restroom a few nights ago at like 3:30.
The Aristocrats. No,
yeah, it's about to become that. Stumbled over this chair. And my foot went directly into the CD case, which you can see is now shattered. But I still had to go to the restroom. So I have this is like the body horror sitcom where I still have to go to the restroom. So I'm like, I can't go downstairs because my foot's bleeding. So I'm like peeing out the window, and it made a noise. So my wife walks in as I'm peeing out the window with my foot bleeding out into this chair. So I thought that was a funny story. I think I left out the peeing out the window part with my coworkers, but you know, they were like, that sounds traumatic. That's not funny. I'm like, well, I guess it's funny when you did it to yourself.
You put that on TikTok, man. You've got yourself an audience immediately.
Yeah, probably. Except, I'm not.
They just expect a lot more of that, though.
Yeah.
You always have to be upping it, right? You always have to be knocking yourself out from the previous one.
That's how you end up a Steve-O, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
So, yeah, I guess Blood and Honey, not recommended. Look at some stills of the costumes and you're good to go.
Yeah, look at some stills, read the synopsis. And if you really feel like you need to see all of that in motion, but not any more interesting, then go watch
Friday the 13th movie. And just take a Friday the 13th movie and superimpose the Pooh costume over Jason.
Rewatch the worst 1980s horror movie you can find, and it's probably still better than Blood and Honey, at least from a sort of like, you know, a merit perspective.
Oh, what is the dumpster fire of 80s horror? My first thought goes to Repossessed, but that is a parody film, so I think it doesn't count, which is Leslie Nielsen doing a Exorcist parody, and it's terrible.
I mean, honestly, I liked the horror movies that were trying to be really scary, but just didn't deliver 100%. One of my favorites is Silent Night, Deadly Night, which has already kind of developed a cult following a little bit, but the movie itself is horrible. It's not a good movie, but it has some amazing practical effects, man. Again, practical effects in a classic horror movie, it's very hard to beat that, even if it looks horrible. Even if we're talking about like Toxic Avenger, you know, the first version levels of practical effects, that is still, it holds up so much better than, you know, ones that don't have it.
That dude getting hit by the car in RoboCop, nothing better than that. Turning into goo. Yeah. I mean, that's not quite a horror movie, but the effects certainly rate.
So with Mickey becoming sort of public domain, or at least certain iterations of Mickey, do you think we can expect a Blood and Honey Mickey Mouse and a Blood and Honey everything else coming out?
Yeah, because that's what this guy wants to do. What I would like to see is someone taking, I guess we're talking the early like Steamboat Willie era Mickey Mouse cartoons. Because Mickey's a more of a little stinker in those. So just up it a bit, you know? Ha-ha, I'm a little stinker. And then, you know, just like capping someone's head off or something.
There's a really popular comic, I'm blanking on the name. It's called like Air Funnies or something like that. But it was, I think it was released in the 70s, and they blatantly just ripped off Mickey and put him into all these, you know, very adult situations, and Minnie Mouse too, I think. And Disney actually had them recalled, and, you know, sent cease and desist out and everything. But you can still find them now, and they're worth a lot of money if you can get like the graded ones. I want to say it's called Air Funnies. I have to look it up, but I feel like that's what you're describing a little bit.
Oh, I don't know if you've ever visited our Twitter page for Call It Disney, but the top features, is it Wally Wood? Is that the name of the artist who did the like pornographic Disneyland picnic?
Yeah.
That's actually the header on our Air Twitter Pirates. Page.
Air Pirates is the name of the comic series.
Oh, okay. Okay. So yeah, thought of that, not that one specifically, but I thought that vibe, you know, when just putting a bit of artwork on the Twitter page, I was like, yeah, see, it's classic art, right? So body art, but what can you do? Speaking of which, I guess I'll start talking about that Twitter and stuff, unless you want to throw something else on this movie.
I mean, like I was mentioning before, I have a short list I can give you, because everyone loves to do the psychological evaluations of all the characters. It's a little bit played out in that regard. So I kind of did like the dark Gnostic play on everyone. So we already mentioned that Winnie as the Demiurge, and we've got
Christopher Robin is the Antichrist.
Is the Antichrist, clearly.
I like saying that.
So Piglet represents the concept of fear and manipulation. Because not only does he let his life just be ruled by fear, but he also kind of represents that limitation that it puts on you. And not only by his stature, but the fact that he's codependent on whoever he's with. And then Tigger, as we kind of mentioned, he, in some ways, Winnie the Pooh is guilty of this too, but Tigger is just the absolute representation of hedonism and excess. You could just imagine this guy is just in and out of swingers clubs all the time. Like he's that guy.
Bouncing right? Clubs.
Yeah, bouncing clubs, right? He's swinging and bouncing.
Can't bounce anymore. Rabbit.
And he just puts his car keys in a bowl immediately. He doesn't even ask what kind of club it is.
Yeah, I was saying Rabbit is like almost literally trying to castrate him. So,
well, so that, I mean, quite literally, because Rabbit represents sort of like authoritarianism and like dogmatic beliefs, right? He's kind of like that old world moral Christian, that church that wants to sacrifice you or, you know, castrate you or send you out into the wilderness to teach you your lesson. And maybe when you come back, you'll just be so traumatized, which is clearly his motivation, right? In the 77 movie, it's basically like, we'll take some of that bounce out of his step. You know, we'll just leave him out in the woods and then he'll have to think about, you know, how horrible we are to him and that his closest friends and family are willing to abandon him and perhaps even let him die in a cold, dark place all alone. And maybe that'll make him being so, you know, stop being so happy all the time. So I kind of love that aspect of Rabbit. It just felt like the humanity that I know more than any of the other characters. So maybe he's just like the true like human that's trying to, you know, sort of codify these rules of the forest. And then what else I've got? Owl is the false knowledge and deception. So if you wanted a trickster or if you wanted sort of like an evil role here, I do think it's Owl because Owl presents himself as like the wise old man. He presents as that archetype, but he's not. He doesn't know how to read. And he kind of pretends that he knows how to read. And he also lives in these horrible, dangerous trees. And he gives children lifelong nightmares for 40 years. And I think he should be stopped.
So he's a Middle Ages Catholic priest, basically.
Yeah, I could kind of see that a little bit.
How many of those guys could really read? I bet there were a few that were faking it.
and then I guess, yeah, Christopher Robin, I really do. I want to hammer in that he kind of plays the unifying force among all the characters, but in doing this, he could be potentially concealing some kind of true intentions. So he also acts as this harbinger of the true physical world, but he doesn't necessarily let all of these stuffed animals know about that. He doesn't let those two worlds interact. So he kind of keeps them to himself. So you could sway me on the demiurge part, but again, Christopher Robin being the Antichrist sounds way cooler than him being the demiurge. So I think that that one wins.
Oh, just one more thing that I will say is nice for Blood and Honey. The end of 77 Pooh going to Blood and Honey actually does have like some proper sequel juice, I think. Like tonally, it's a really fun turn of the key into the next movie. It's just, I wish the next movie had been, you know, somewhat better. I mean, not or worse. I mean, maybe it needed to be shittier to really be good.
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Not in this case. In some cases, yeah. Maybe, but you know what it is? Like, I really do. I feel like I've heard someone else say this, so I don't want to take credit, but like the movie The Room, which is rumored to be like one of the worst movies, but also it's so bad that it's good to watch. And I do fall into that camp. I do think that The Room is so bad that it's good. But the reason behind it is because the person making it was so delusional that they thought it really was this amazing, epic movie. And you can feel that insane nervous energy come out in like every scene. Whereas this one, you feel that someone is cashing in a little bit, right? You feel as you're watching it, that feeling of like, oh, an IP became public domain and someone's cashing in on it. And they're just kind of like making money off this and haha, it's funny that they're doing this. And I get it. And you're in on the joke. But it lacks someone that actually spent like 30 years, like, I'm going to write a horror movie about Winnie the Pooh, like regardless of the IP and the legal and like the money making. Right. If someone would just sat down and they truly wanted to make a horrible horror Winnie the Pooh movie, even if they had zero budget, that would be an amazing watch, I think.
You know, it's going to be amazing in 70 years when all that early internet fan fiction can be legally made into films and such, or holograms or whatever we're watching by then. Just take that, you know.
Legally, I mean, dude, you just feed that in the ChatGPT and Midjourney and it'll just pump out a movie for you. You don't got to wait for it to be legal.
Yeah, but if you take the Pokemon Matrix mashup that my friend wrote when he was 10 years old and just make that into a real movie, that'd be amazing. Because he was 10 or 12. It was very sincere. So yeah, I think he read some of that on a podcast actually. So yeah, when we did the Matrix, he did. So
I mean, honestly, it could hold up. If you took a passionate 10-year-old and, you know, gave it a little bit of treatment to like give the cohesion that I'm sure most 10-year-olds do not deliver to a feature length story. You add some of that in there, I think some of the ideas would probably rival some of the dumb things that we see in movies now.
An obsessed 10-year-old can make a better Blood and Honey, which might be correct. Hey, look, them 12. They need to be able to at least go out without their parents to do it properly. I guess I do need to wrap this one up, so I'll go ahead and do the deets real quick. This is a Call It Disney podcast. It is out on Twitter with the pornographic Disneyland picture at the header. And you can support us on, yeah, support us on Patreon at Podcastio Podcastius, where we also talk about the best films and the worst films. We'll be talking about The Room pretty soon as well. That's Films and Filth, the Citizen Kane of podcasting. I talk about The Twilight Zone at Time Enough Podcast, which is why I need to end this podcast, actually. And you can hear some video game stuff with Luke Loves Pokemon, Hyrule Field Report about the Zelda games, and the Game Show, in which British people game each other about games. Although last week it was actually myself and a few Yankees doing the the American comedy reboot version. So what's up in your world? What's your release?
You can always find me on ParanoidAmerican.com. I just recently released my first live episode on YouTube. So you can find Paranoid American on YouTube now. And basically, whenever I go on a live swapcast somewhere, I'll live stream it there. But I'm also working on a series of AI generated documentaries. The first one I'm working on, it's the Occult History of the Pentagram. It's completely animated and it's narrated by LeVar Burton of Reading Rainbow, talking about the pentagram and how it plays into like modern mysticism and everything else. And then I have another one that's narrated by Robert Stack of Unsolved Mysteries. But I don't want to reveal what the topic of that one is yet. They're both kind of in the works, but you'll be able to find both of those on the YouTube, and I think you'll find them enjoyable. At least.
Oh yeah, no, I was as a hardcore Trekkie just watching the new Picard episode last night between my poos, and that sounds horrible again. And between my poos, and, LeVar Burton shows up there, so yeah, personally send me those links, please. Yeah.
It took a long time, and I mean, I've listened to LeVar Burton in AI saying a lot of weird things, and it's delightful. It is delightful.
So is LeVar Burton the king of AI then? He probably doesn't even know it himself.
He doesn't realize it yet. No, maybe he will. That would be cool if he did.
Okay, well, it's going to take me 4 hours, but I'm going to go find my way to those 100-acre woods and get my head ripped off and eaten.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.